This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 9th of November, 2021. Another session yesterday where we're seeing in the U.S. equity market an inability to sort of make new highs, but likewise not really seeing any particularly urgency to sell either. So we're losing a bit of momentum. And I guess maybe more interesting to look at where some of the activity is. And of course, a lot of that activity has been in some of the bubble stocks recently. We've seen some back and forth there. Yesterday, there was one sector that really stood out, at least I'm looking at your list here, besides blockchain, which we just have to mention in case those of you out there don't follow it. Bitcoin making a new high, over $2,000 up yesterday. But Peter, what's your sector focus here?
When you look at the different theme baskets, a lot was going on in the different growth pockets. As you can see, we had six baskets doing gaining more than 2%. So everything from cybersecurity to cannabis in the absolute top, almost gaining 8%. And the reason for that was that there was a Republican-led bill in motion to legalize marijuana. And so far it has only been, the Democratic side that has really been pushing for this. But now it seems like there is a compromise across the aisle, and it's seen as a major positive that the Republicans are now also moving in favor of legalizing cannabis. And it's funny because you and I talked about it yesterday, that I looked at one of these biggest names in our basket, Canopy Growth, a Canadian-based grower of cannabis, and it's just they can't really get to sustain profitability, and as you said, I mean, yeah, they're trying to grow the easiest plant in the world, so how can you ever make a buck from that? And it is quite mind-boggling that despite almost $700 million in revenue, that a company like Canopy Growth can't even crank out a single cent of profit. So, but I think just general, John, on the equity market, I think it's a pretty key trading session today. You can see that both the Nasdaq yesterday had a lower high and a lower low. The S&P 500 was clearly also holding or topping, or we could be topping out here in equity. So I think it's a key session where we can sustain the momentum, or we will probably take a minor correction down in equities. And I think the dollar and the interest rate will be key to watch.
The backdrop of this being this incredible advance in equities, of course, some of it had been driven by these low yields.
Yeah.
As you would often have said in the past, but just to me, why are those yields so low when we have these inflationary outcomes and concerns? There's the sum of the parts does not add up here. No. And I sense a real frustration also with other people. There's something wrong in this market. I'm not gonna say what's wrong, but something's wrong. The sum of the parts does not add up. So just a warning there. We've touted this warning before, and of course, once we really got cautious, we saw a sell-off in September, and now we've seen an incredible ramping to new all-time highs. So yeah, egg on our face, etc. But take it from people that on the desk and around the shop, and other people that have centuries of experience put together. And that's not to myself. This is a very odd market. We could be in a blow-off phase for some of these themes, bubble stocks, risk, etc., liquidity, what have you. With that little spiel, let's dive back down into the daily stuff.
Let's round off equities before we go into the bigger stuff. So we had PayPal. We mentioned that yesterday's podcast as our earnings focus, and they reported after the market. Initially, the share price was going high in extended trading, but then it completely reversed. The market was so focused on Q3 numbers being rather okay versus expectations. And then this whole Venmo, which is their social payments app, which is expected to do $900 million in revenues this year, had struck a deal with Amazon, allowing customers to pay with the Venmo app during purchases on Amazon. And the market was very excited. But then they looked at the Q4 guidance and said, wait a minute. We are $300 million short on versus estimates. So in rough terms, that's a 5 percentage points miss against expectations. And PayPal has put this long-term growth rate around 20% organic growth out there. And with the current Q4 guidance, I know there's a little bit of base effects and headwinds from the pandemic, but they're more looking like a 14 to 15% growth company. So that might be something that could take the share price even further low.
Okay, so one of the things we've talked about recently is the drop in these yields, especially the long term or long end of the U.S. yield curve, but also global yield curves. I'll say we have you on the podcast today. We've saw that big dump on Friday in yields, rally in treasuries, if you will, which was a bit of a head scratcher. But take us through what you think is driving these yields lower. And there was also a three-year treasury auction yesterday.
Well, John, before you said it's frustrating to see the yields dropping this much, and indeed it has been frustrating to see them dropping on Friday amid very strong non-farm payrolls. But the reason for that drop is very much to have to do with short covering. Basically, there was large volumes of short options open on the long part of the yield curve. And when we have seen yields correcting lower, well, that obviously spiked in a much descending, much stronger descending trend that we would have expected. Just to give you some context, in only 2 days, within Thursday and Friday last week, 10 years US Treasury yields dropped by 15 basis points, which is the largest 2 days drop since June 2020, when basically we were getting just out of the coronavirus pandemic. So the move was exceptionally strong. I want to take you on slide five, where I basically put a 10 years yields chart. And I think that at this point is very important to highlight the 10 years yields are trading around the 200 days moving average, and if they break below that level, we could see yields dropping again to find resistance at around 1.40%. But what can provoke that move lower? Well, we can today we have the 10 years US Treasury auction. Tomorrow we have inflation numbers, and after the inflation numbers we have a 30 years auction. Just for context, yesterday we had quite a solid three-year auction because demand was solid. We have seen a high demand of indirect bidders. But what was special about yesterday's auction was basically that investors demanded for a much higher yield, and it tailed 1 basis point, which was the biggest tail since April last year, April 2020. And this was happening despite the 3 years auction was offering the highest yield since February last year. So what I'm saying is that this rally doesn't resonate with investors, especially when it comes in the front part of the yield curve. But the long part of the yield curve is trading on a different kind of, is playing a different kind of game, is looking at a possible economic slowdown. And yesterday there has been news of Biden interviewing last week Brainard for Fed chair. And that's obviously a dovish sign that could push yields further down. But if we look at the long term and by the end of the year, I'm still convinced we will see those yields resuming the rise and possibly break above that 1.75 resistance that we have seen trying a few times this year.
And then we have in Europe, it's been a real disappointment for those looking for a different attitude from Germany once they formally do form a new coalition. My concerns being, at least on the EU existential front, that these LDP, the Liberal Party, getting the finance ministry would just be an own goal or shooting yourself in the foot for the coalition, other coalition parties in terms of their agenda. But that may be the price they have to pay for getting that coalition together. That's really the key thing. Don't you think so, Alte, when you look at at least German Bunds?
Yeah, absolutely. Like if you go on slide number six, you see the 10 years bond yields. And as of last week, they dropped below minus 0.25%. again. Today, the market is focusing on the zoo survey, which basically is going to further, well, is expected to show a further deterioration of sentiment, which should be supported for low rates in the euro area. But still, if we think about the long term and we put our target by the end of the year, we have still to think that we have on the background the German elections still brewing, and we have also inflationary pressures that are strengthening by the day. So it's almost impossible to see bond yields dropping lower than that. I would assume that they would begin to rise again later in the year.
Yeah, that negative 0.25% level looks quite important here locally. And then briefly on the gilts. So it's interesting to see, we saw that shock last week on the Bank of England, total debacle in terms of their communication coming into the meeting. They did not hike rates. But although they've taken a bit of punch out of the forward rate curve, there's still a lot priced in, isn't there?
Absolutely. There is a 4 rate hikes priced for 2022. And this week, we are going to have GDP data, industrial and manufacturing data coming out of the UK. If they are weak, they should be supportive for lower yields and lower interest rate hikes for 2022. So we might see gilt yields dropping once again. But I want to take you on slide 7, where I put the spread between 30 and 10 years gilt yields. This is currently a focus because last week it was close to inversion. It basically dropped as much as 7 basis points, and it still remains a focus because now it's trading around 14 basis points. And if we see a rally in yields, we should see the yield curve steepening slightly. But if that doesn't happen, well, we are in danger zone, and we could see an inversion of the yield curve.
Interesting stuff. All right. Now, over in FX, not a whole lot going on, except for one thing that's very salient with these dropping yields. And I'll pull it all the way back to slide 4, because I wanted to pull out why Bell Yen is challenging below the local support area, below that 113.25 area, even below, well below 113 overnight. So I put up a chart of dollar yen. That's the blue candlesticks versus the just simply the U.S. nominal 10-year benchmark. And of course, you can see the correlation there, less tight than it is, or tighter and looser on occasion, depending on what else is going on, but quite tight recently over the last several months. And you can see it may be a bit more interesting, the real yields in the U.S. with people bidding up inflation protection, and with those nominal yields very low here locally, we're seeing real 10-year yields back towards the cycle lows there. At minus 115 basis points for the 10 years. So these factors dragging the yen stronger. If this extends further and we get new record lows, we could see an outright reversal in dollar yen. I'm hedging my bets and waiting to see what happens here. I think the Wednesday CPI, so tomorrow's CPI number, is key, as well as the direction in real yields and nominals, as Althea just went through for the U.S. longer end of the yield curve. But certainly worth tracking as a theme, real yields and the Japanese yen. And then rounding out FX, you can see on slide 8, really watching the status of the dollar this week. And again, tomorrow's CPI, I think, is going to be the key test there. But just take a pair like the Aussie dollar. You have Australia with its recently dovish RBA. There was a big repricing, however, of the forward curve from the RBA, which, as the market successfully second-guessed their intent to maintain that yield curve control policy. But now we've sort of seen the RBA's, the whites of their eyes. They came out, they abandoned the yield curve control. They keep a very cautious outlook on when they're actually going to achieve liftoff on rates. So we're sort of back to a middle of the range here. And if you look on slide 8, the Aussie dollar insert, you can see really pivotal stuff. So the 200-day moving average is sort of resistance and arguably up to that 76 area, which was the old range low, or old range support from back pre-June FOMC meeting. But we've not sort of fully capitulated back lower, which I think would require another, let's call it a figure from where we're trading this morning, just above 74, would really put the pressure back on Aussie dollar to the downside. I would suspect that would coincide with a bit of weakness in commodity markets. Iron ore is already weak in Australia, but as well just in risk appetite more broadly to get a capitulation trade back lower. Worth pointing out briefly, talk about that real yield story and driving dollar yen. It's also what's driving gold, as we saw gold getting close to that 1835 area, very much a signal worth watching. if that 1835 area is cleared and any move above that sticks, because it's starting to suggest some sort of macro switch or focus on gold, something bigger afoot here. Until then, we've just been teased endlessly, but still just keep an eye on gold, as put it back on your indicator list if you've kind of abandoned for a while, justifiably so, because it's been awfully boring. And actually, before I get to you, Peter, I just want to briefly mention, there's a bit interesting that we saw a Fed financial stability report out overnight, got a few headlines in the press. I tweeted out a couple of these articles on my Twitter feed. One of them being, you know, what are potential sources of financial stability risks? And a couple were pulled out. The Chinese property market was one that was mentioned in the report. But even the meme stocks somehow finally getting on the Fed's radar as well. And there was nothing specific or no sort of significant drumbeat of concern around this, but just interesting that they make it into the report like that and are considered potentially a factor. All right, I'll shut up now for at least for a moment. I'll be back to not shut up. But Peter, what's going on earnings? There's still an awful lot of names here on this list you've got on slide 9.
Yeah, so today's focus is Coinbase and NIO. I have also put in DR Horton, and that's because of its importance in the U.S. home building sector. So I think that's still a very important sector to track in the U.S. for activity. It's always a very pro-cyclical industry. So, but if we focus on Coinbase, so they did their IPO earlier this year. It coincided with a local peak in Bitcoin prices, and it took a big slide down in Bitcoin prices. Almost, was it a 50% drawdown, John, at one point? And as you can see on slide 9 here, Coinbase share price also rode down that decline in Bitcoin. And recently, a lot more upbeat sentiment on the company. And if you look at trading activity across different cryptocurrencies here in Q4, I think there is a slight possibility that we could get an upside surprise to the current Q4 revenue estimates. I have put in a little insert there. You can see it's consensus is looking for $1.6 billion in revenue for Q4, just slightly higher than the $1.57 billion of revenue expected for the last quarter in Q3. So I think there is an upside surprise here to Coinbase, and I think that's partly what has been being reflected in the latest momentum. Sometimes sell side analysts are quite lacking in updating their estimates.
And it doesn't hurt that Bitcoin is trading at all-time highs going into an earnings report. Never a harmful side factor there.
No, exactly. And we know Coinbase is the largest company in our crypto and blockchain basket. It's the most liquid, and it's very, very, very profitable, as you can see, because this industry, unlike what we see in futures market and FX spot and cash equities, these are financial instruments that trade with very wide bid off spreads.
A lot of friction. It's an inefficient market still. Yeah,
very sure. Much. Yeah. And then NIO, we regular listeners and viewers of our slides will know that I have this EV battle slide that I put out from time to time, and we did so recently with the delivery numbers from Tesla and Volkswagen and the other German automakers. And the gist is that the only one that is right now catching up with Tesla's ramping up of production is Volkswagen, and Tesla is very much in the lead still in the EV, and NIO is the equivalent of Tesla in China. They have also had trouble scaling up their production recently. So I'm very curious to see whether they, I know Q3 won't be a blockbuster quarter. So it's all about the guidance for NIO. And with a lot of the recent comments from the Chinese government about supporting the EV and the battery sector, I'm very curious to see how upbeat this company is.
All right. And that takes us to the macro calendar. I don't want to spend much time on that, but have a look at it. There's a lot going on to slide 10 today, potential risks if somebody speaks up a bit more sharply than would be expected in terms of various central bankers out with various appearances. October PPI out of the U.S. expected at 8.6%. That would be unchanged from the September level, still like multi-decade highs, 6.8% on the core expected. And then note the Chinese PPI and CPI out overnight. Also, a modern record's expected there since the Chinese devaluation back in 1994, the renminbi devaluation. So keep an eye on that and the 10-year treasury auction in Altea space and yields. And I've even invented a new color for economic numbers that I think are particularly important, the purple number. So I put the tomorrow's U.S. October CPI in purple. I think it's an important release for just testing sentiment and themes across asset classes. For today, that's a wrap, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.